Welcome to What's Your Story Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Story. On this pod, I sit down with people of color leaders to understand how they've been able to use their superpowers to make an impact on our world. And I do it one story at a time. My guest on the pod today is a former NFL player. He spent time with the Rams and the Buccaneers, but he then decided to take his skills and his talents on from the field to multiple forums that he's been able to contribute to, both including media, marketing, and communications. And he now finds himself as actually a colleague of mine at Visa. So I'm really excited to welcome Cameron Lynch to the show.
Appreciate you for having me, Matt. It's nice to be on.
Thank you for taking the time to join. Before we get into all the various things that your journey has included, I always like to start by hearing if you could share just a story and walk us into what little Cam was like.
Little Cam was like big Cam, a lot of energy, a lot of smiling, and I enjoy people. I enjoy speaking to people, supporting people, and that's part of my mission statement, really. My personal one is just to be a champion for my community and for change as well. So yeah, that's what little Cam was like.
That's great. That's great. It was good to hear it's consistent, even though you've touched on so many things along the way. So when you were growing up, like, did you know what you wanted to do beyond just, you know, making an impact, being that champion for your community? Did you have an idea in mind?
Not at a young age. Of course, I had the NFL blankets growing up when I was two or one. I never really had a favorite NFL team, and I still don't. Well, I root for the Buccaneers and the Rams, but I just knew that that's what I wanted to do, quote unquote, growing up. And then also, too, I realized that there was also a parallel career path, right? Like, football's a thing, but hey, I'm also very studious. I love to read. I love to do other things. So I found that I had multiple talents, I would say, at a young age, outside of that one goal is the NFL.
So where did you grow up? What led to you not having a team?
Yeah, so I grew up in California, so Long Beach, California. So the Rams were in St. Louis at the time, but I was a big USC fan. Grew up watching Reggie Bush, so, you know, USC, the UCLA, and then moved to Atlanta. And so then you got UGA out there, Georgia Tech. So I was a real big college fan in my adolescent years. And then, but as like a youth, basketball, Kobe, Lakers, I mean, you got it behind you. Mm-hmm. That's something that I really loved and enjoyed, is watching basketball, because I wasn't the best at it. And I knew I wanted to do football. So I was like, okay, like, I don't have to watch this all the time, but I can watch basketball, watch Kobe and Shaq. I had two turtles, and they were named Kobe and Shaq. So
did they get along, or did they fight? Like,
yeah, they were chill. They were chill. Okay. Land tortoises, Shaq and Kobe. I grew up with them in Atlanta. Rest in peace now. You know what I mean? Okay. But okay. Same thing with Kobe. I just actually saw recently that his wife, they actually restarted their partnership with Nike and everything like that. So I'm excited to see what they cook up.
Yeah, definitely. So you named a lot of colleges in there, but one you didn't name was Syracuse, which is ultimately where you ended up going. And, you know, you studied economics. So how did you go from being a USC, UCLA, UGA fan to ending up on the East Coast?
Yeah, well, Syracuse wanted me. I sent them my highlight tape, and they were like, hey, here's an offer. And I never talked to them or anything like that, just made one point of contact. And I looked at that. I was like, okay, this is great. You know, I went to Syracuse and USC, UCLA and USC camps since I was a freshman or a sophomore in high school. And they didn't want me like Syracuse wanted me. And so I find myself gravitating to places or people who want me there, who know that I can make the room better. And so Syracuse believed in me in that way. And so I took a trip up there, and I realized Syracuse has a campus in LA as well. And so after I graduated, it became a full circle moment. We got to play USC up in MetLife in New York City. I mean, yeah, in New York. I ended up playing back at the Coliseum for the Rams. Yeah. So I wasn't able to pick the college that I wanted initially. The college that was right for me came around, and essentially I was able to compete against the college that I wanted to go.
That's great. And there's that included in that is a message I think all of us should think about is like you wanted to be in a community that supported you and gave you the things you needed, even though it may not have been what you would have selected or picked if left up to your own choices. So, you know, obviously having the opportunity to play, you know, college football, following that dream of one day getting to the NFL. But it sounds like you always had these layers to you, and you weren't just one thing. So I'm curious, how did you manage that? Because obviously, as you matriculate from high school to college, pros, the demands on your time become much, much, and much more difficult. So how did you maintain all of those layers across those different phases, if you will?
Yeah, I think the people around me, the team. I'm big on the who. The who for me is really important. And you know, when it comes to my parents, my coaches, my friends, and, you know, that bubble, that circle has allowed me to maintain that balance. So, for an example, you know, I retired from the NFL in 2019. And so what I realized is my identity outside of football were the people who helped me get to the NFL, essentially. So I tapped back into that inner circle, and I essentially figured that, hey, like, I need to continue to grow these relationships, communicate more often. And so I realized doing that a couple of years ago was something that I did throughout middle school, high school, college, and to that point, it just looked different. And so I call it now the stakeholder roadmap, right? Going back to that stakeholder roadmap and seeing the people who have supported you throughout the journey. And so doing that has allowed me to find that balance now. And it did then. I just didn't know what it was called.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. So, you know, not all of us get the chance to play in the NFL. Not all of us get a chance to reach that status. I'm curious, what would you say is the most surprising thing about making it to the league that most people just wouldn't know or wouldn't be familiar with?
That some of the people that are in the league, they don't look much different or stature-wise than myself. I'm only 6 feet tall, you know. So when I went to the Super Bowl this past year, saw some of the Visa folks, they looked at me like, this guy, you know, like, he's only 6 feet tall. Like, doesn't look that strong or big. And I got one of the other NFL guys from our cohort, Copeland Bryan, and he's 6'5", like, D lineman. So I think one thing is the people in the NFL and professional sports, they think different than the person that is not. Other than that, it's not much difference until you get to your basketballs and, you know, where the guys are 6'5" and the gals are 6'5" and above. So that's a little bit different. But other than that, they think different. Their 10,000 hour rule is allotted to something different than someone who works at Visa or whatever that is. So It's neck up. Tom Brady is back because neck up, he knows that he's just situationally better than everybody that can play a sport. So yeah. It's just cool to witness.
Yeah, it like goes beyond the physical attributes and the capabilities into how do you apply those in a way that is smarter, more efficient, better, which again, I think there's comparisons and translations to every field from not just an athletic standpoint, but also as you think about the corporate athlete, if you will. So you mentioned retiring in 2019, but obviously you had already probably started thinking about what was next. So how did you plan for that next chapter in your career?
Yeah, that really started in high school, where one of my buddies said, hey, Cam, after your football interviews, or after watching your football interviews, I realized you're trash. I was like, ooh, we want to say championship. What are you talking about? Because like, I can't really hear you. The ring and the bling is just blocking the sound. No, but he was like, hey, like, it's not good. He's an artist and he creates music and he understands the craft. And he's like, the word economy is not great. Like the delivery, like, I think you should do this as a friend. Like, I'm your guy. Like, I think you should do this. And so after that, I was like, okay. And so in college, I had a chance to do the ACC Media Day, where we're going from the Big East, Syracuse, to the ACC. So we got Florida State. That's when they won the national championship. And they played Hangman against us. That was my team, right? We were preparing for the Media Day. And so going to that next stage and next level, I realized like I like speaking in front of the camera and being on the microphone. So just being in those arenas, some of the media folks from Syracuse like, hey, Cam, like you're actually good at this. Like you're getting better. Your friend told you in high school you were trash. Now you're getting better. And so I started taking it really serious then. And I realized, and Syracuse is the broadcasting school, is like number one in the country next to, you know, Northwestern and Missouri. And so I realized like that passion off the field has been sparked. So after practice, I would go in my collar shirt and interview the teammates, the managers, the chefs, the coaches, whoever. And I was like, I actually really like this, being a communicator, enjoying media. And so that's when I realized that parallel career path must be built. And that's when that spark came in college. So it built from high school, someone telling me I'm trash, until then college. Yeah. And then I started my media company at the NFL when I was playing. And I realized like, hey, this football thing won't be forever, but the NFL is not for long. So let me make sure that parallel career path is proper.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you mentioned earlier, focusing in on those people that supported you, you almost use that network of folks that you had in your football playing days to build that bridge to where you wanted to go to next and go back and be able to develop those skill sets. And, you know, I always talk about getting reps and, you know, maybe, you know, even in, you know, the playing field, it's like, you know, getting your weight up. Like when you get the reps, you get the time spent preparing, it allows you to perform at that much higher level. And you were doing that simultaneously, which allowed you to really, really take that on. And you also have your own podcast, Energy Captains, which probably ties in a lot of those communication skills, but also with some of the things you talked about Little Cam had. So can you give me an inside look at like what you're looking to build and how you're building your brand as an athlete and like what, and think about what life in sports is like, and also just what drew you to podcasts in general as you're thinking about that as an, again, it's a platform to communicate and connect with people and build community.
Yeah. I think when podcasting got really serious for me, it was during the pandemic and 2020, when that started, and I realized that I had to pivot, and podcasting was the best pivot. I had a chance to be on television after retiring, actually get my first opportunity to work outside of sport, and I'm writing my own script, creating my own stories. And I'm like, whoa, this is extremely different. And once we had to go out of office back home, you know, having the media company, I'm like, okay, like I need to build and create revenue and different things and grind and figure out what I want to do or what direction I want to go in more. So I knew what I wanted to do. And then, so I had a client who was a former player and he was like, Cam, like, you know, I want to build my brand. I was like, podcasting is the best way to go. Cause I just realized when working for the television station that some of the podcasts were doing better than some of the hits that we're doing on television. And I just started to understand the dynamics of social content, digital media, YouTube, and everything like that. And so I was like, okay, you know, I have a marketing director. She supported me while I was playing. And we were like, hey, let's just talk sport, business, and football, and sport, business, and personal life, and just go from there. And so we started podcasting. I started editing my own clips. And now I realize that I enjoy doing podcasting when it comes to my colleagues, people that I really enjoy and support. Other than that, if I want to get a story off my chest, I don't want to do media unless I'm being paid for it, right? Because at the end of the day, like creating podcasts is tough. It's not an easy game. Sometimes you're just not in the mood to podcast one week. You know, you got to get the content out there, have great guests, have great conversations. So it is a true grind. And I realize that I need to have the proper community, the proper approach when doing this, and a game plan. Because as you know, it's not easy.
Yeah, I describe it as a labor of love, because there's a lot that goes into it that most people probably don't, you know, if you're not behind the scenes, you don't recognize. But it is also one of the most, I would say, intimate formats of content, because like right now we're talking into someone's ear, and you don't understand that, like, if I sit down and watch a series or I watch a TV show, yes, I'm into it, but I'm not necessarily connecting in one form. Like I'm seeing it, I'm hearing it, and you're able to kind of play off of multiple senses, which creates a little bit of a distance. Whereas like when you're focusing to really listen to what someone's saying, I feel like you just connect in a different way, which is one of the reasons why I really enjoyed a way or medium, if you will, to tell stories, because it's just something that I think has a unique connection point into our lives. Kind of like, you know, going back to old school, like radio, like, you know, people would sit around and listen to the radio and hear storytelling, and it gives you your imagination more because you don't have so many things to go off of from a sensory standpoint.
Yeah. And I like that. It's funny too, because like the thing about podcasting is we're able to go back and chat about those things. If we're doing live television, it's like, okay, like we got to get to the next promotion. We got to get to this. Yeah. And podcasting allows you to show your personality. And if there is a, you know, something that takes you off, you can go down that path and then come right back to it. So it is, like you said, a very intimate space. And it's almost like playing one-on-one, like, hey, like, you know, tennis, like I'm gonna pass you the ball, you pass me the ball. Like yeah. we hit it back and forth and let's have a great match and let's keep this volley going. And so it's interesting art. And I'm hyped to be speaking to you about this because actually this is the first podcast that I've done with a coworker outside of my own podcast and NFL players and stuff like that. So it's nice to do this.
Yeah, it's a good segue. So we were obviously connected through you joining the Team Visa as a part of our NFL Rotational Associate Program. And I'm curious, you have wide experience. So how have you navigated that shift into a more traditional business organization that has certain practices and things that, you know, take a bit of a learning curve, if you will, to get used to? So how have you been able to navigate that as you've gotten up to speed, met people, and, you know, made such a quick impact in the halls of Visa?
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. And what I realized is I need to understand the playbook. I need to understand the rules, the terminology. And so what I did after I retired football is I went and got my MBA. And so I interned for the Los Angeles Sport and Entertainment Commission, the NFL, worked at the NFL. And while getting my MBA, and I realized I need to understand the rules and who is who and what is what. So then I can get the actual educational background and then I can apply it to the commission, to the NFL. So then now when I get to Visa, I can take that package and run with it. And so once I found the boundaries of like where to go and where not to go, now it's just being nice to people, connecting. Yeah. And then like it's there. It's like playing chess, really. That's really what it is. It's like playing chess. So really planning and preparing each week to figure out how can I work in those boundaries and really support other people and be of service. After most calls, I say, hey, how can I support you? How can I help you? Because at the end of the day, people remember how you make them feel. At the end of the day, no matter what I know, no matter how many people I tackle, they don't care. They're just like, hey, are you a good guy or no? Because if not, like, I'm not going to tell my kids that I talked to an NFL player because, you know, you were not nice. But if you are nice, then it's like, oh, yo, I talked to such and such and they're great. Like, that's when I'm gone, like, that's what I want.
Yeah. No, it's funny. So by far, my favorite quote is Maya Angelou, you know, and I'll paraphrase, people forget what you did, they'll forget what you said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. And I actually had, I cannot remember who it was, but it might've been a training seminar or some type of academic setting where we talked about as a people leader and as a team member, the people you work with, their family knows your name. And it's up to you to determine, is that in a positive light or is it in a negative light? And like, that's just something that never left me of like, your impact isn't just on your coworkers. Like, you're impacting their families and their communities. And so you're 100% right on like having that focus in on like, how do you make people feel and showing them I'm not the person that, you know, is on the Wikipedia page. I'm actually a real person. Here I am. This is what I do. This is what I can bring to the table. But ultimately, I'm here to help. I'm here to be a part of this community, which I think sets you apart. And then the added bonus is I now see that you, similar to me, you like metaphors and you use them very well, which is something that you're a man after my own heart, because I always feel like a metaphor is the best way to take complex ideas and concepts and far out there things and to really simplify them down in a way of like, oh, it's like chess. Or as you mentioned, like you had to figure out the rules of the game as you were navigating the second career. I think it helpful for people to understand that transition, if you will.
Yeah, making it simple. Like I mentioned, doing broadcasting media, I had a chance to broadcast some games, a football game. So the first one was the Super Bowl through the NFL, of course, like doing their boot camp and they're like, all right, first game Super Bowl, doing that, and then FIU, their men's football games. And like, man, no lie, like I was hired to go do those games. I would drive from Tampa to Miami in the car 3 hours. And I had no idea about that team, about those players. So I had to YouTube and Google. And then when I got on that when I got on that microphone, I had to do my best from what I knew. I'm a football professional. I wasn't an FIU professional. But what I did was I made it simple. I'm like, hey, I live in Tampa. I play for the Bucks. Coming down here, Miami's great. And one thing I do know, in cover two, that corner is supposed to have that, have the sideline. What is he doing in the middle of the field? That's it. It's just simple. So just going, keeping things simple. Like you said, the analogies, the metaphors, and making someone who's never watched football enjoy it. Like, oh, like, I really like soccer, the real football, but the way that that was broken down, like, oh, let me watch a little bit more. And so that's the goal. And if I can take that from the field and from the booth to the corporate space, like, cooking with grease, and then also treating people right and connecting with the right folks. Like, there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, definitely. So I want to switch to the brand of Cam for a bit. And I, you know, I'm a firm believer that we all have superpowers. I'm a firm believer that we develop them over time. Some of them, you know, maybe part of our natural born ability. Some of it's just the lived experiences we have. Some of it may be intentional. You know, we're working on developing these things. But if you were to have to answer the question, what would you say is your superpower?
My superpower is being an energy captain. That's the name of my podcast. My energy level, a lot of the times, is on 1,000. People say, oh, he's on 100. He's on 10. Like, for me, just add one more zero, because the reason why I say that is because my self-care routine is not the best, but I take it serious. Through playing football, we would work hard. We would out in 100-degree weather, we would work hard. And I figured out to play a long time, I'd have to recover hard as well. So my recharge, my bounce back, I've worked on it each and every day, to where whenever I go and do something, they're like, wow, you have so much energy. Like, you know, throughout a whole day, people are exhausted. Like, hey, why do you have so much energy? It's because I recover really hard. When I'm resting, I'm resting. And so whenever my cup is full, whenever I go to work, I'm ready to go. And so I, you know, the reason why I started doing that and started putting a name to it, I heard, and I'm going to go to a football player here, Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown, he has some things to work on, right? Like we all do, mentally, physically, spiritually. So no one's perfect. One thing I learned about him while at the Buccaneers, actually, I was getting massages after the workouts. I mean, it's 100 out. People are cramping up. We got to go perform the next day. If not, you don't perform, you get cut as an undrafted 6-foot linebacker. And so what I heard was, they were like, oh, LeBron spends $1 million on his body each and every year, blah, blah, blah. I'm hearing James Harrison doing the same thing, big macho guy. And then I'm hearing Antonio Brown. They said he is a masseuse, multiple masseuses. So one masseuse is working on the right side of the body, one on the left, one on the hand. And after each practice, he's recovering so hard. He's getting a massage. He's doing cryo. LeBron James, as soon as he's off the court, he's recovering. And I started doing that. And after each practice, I'll be the first one on the massage table, shower, right on the massage table. And each practice, I was fresh on the field. My body was moving fast. I wasn't tired. My energy level was always on 1,000. And that allowed me to stay on the field. I'm only 6 feet tall. I'm not supposed to be playing professional football. Like, but the fact that I have the superpower of resting hard, recovering, that allowed me to continue forward. So that's my superpower, I would say, is being an energy captain.
So I have to ask, how have you manifested that energy in a corporate, largely virtual setting? Because a lot of the things that we typically get energy from, we don't have anymore, because, you know, we're sitting on screens and we're talking into computers all day. So how do you, you know, what's the equivalent of the massage? What's the equivalent of the recovery cycle from a more of a corporate setting?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I feel like I mastered that through graduate school. So that's one thing graduate school did for me during the pandemic, is it's all virtual. So I'm understanding the playbook. So I've taken that playbook to the virtual corporate space. Folks that are 50, 60, they don't have the virtual playbook down. They're like, how do I work the Zoom? But I've gotten practice. I've gotten hours and hours of doing Excel, pivot tables, taking tests and quizzes virtually. And so what I realized, one thing that Visa has done recently, is I realized you can change it on your calendar. But instead of a call starting at the top of the hour, at that 30-minute mark, making it start 5 minutes after the expected time. So it allows you to say, hey, like, I know I got to rush to get to this call, but let me knock out a few things and prepare for this meeting before I jump into it, so I can take some time for myself. So taking a lot of self-care moments throughout the day is important for me. Sometimes getting off of camera is huge for me because I talk a lot, clearly. I mean, I talk a lot. And so people want to talk to me. And so I understand that. So what I do is I keep my camera off a lot of the times on calls, and I just communicate with them in other ways, because being on camera often wears out. And so that's how I keep my self-care, is really getting off camera as much as possible. Unless I'm podcasting, you know, I got to smile, then I'm going to go camera on.
Yeah, no, it makes, I mean, what's under all of that is there's a self-awareness. And so you're aware of the things that you kind of have to infuse and you have to make time for. And, you know, I think one of the things a lot of us get stuck with is you just take things at face value. Like, the meeting has to start at the top of the hour, or the meeting has to start at this time, or I have to be on camera because everyone is, versus saying, you know what, it probably served me better to modify this, or it probably served, I'd have more energy to give in this engagement if I modified this one particular piece.
Yeah. And someone told me this too. They said, work on not saying sorry each day. Like, if you're not wrong, so for an example, for the camera, this is the best tip. They said, instead of when you get on camera, somebody pops on immediately, say, hey, thank you for allowing me to be off camera today. I'm looking forward to our conversation, you know, per the call agenda. How was the weekend, you know? And instead of saying, hey, sorry, like, this has happened, my internet's bad. You get the, internet. Yeah. And so just saying, hey, thank you for allowing me to be off camera. If, you know, if it's cool, other than that, how was the weekend? And then rolling that way. And I started doing that. And it was great. The people get off their camera too. They're like, hey, I'm so glad you said something, because I didn't want to be on camera too. So
it's been nice. You hit on something. And I think, I don't have the data on this, but I know I've seen reports that particularly people of color and women suffer from that exact same thing of always apologizing and over apologizing for things that you shouldn't be sorry for. And so it's one of those things, anytime I write an email and I start with sorry for, or I'm sorry, like a trigger hits my head. I'm like, nope, take it out. Like, nope. Like, thank you for your patience in my response to blah, blah, blah. Or thank you for reaching out. Like again, using gratitude as the way to make that connection, as opposed to coming it from it from a apologize standpoint, because it's all about energy. Like anytime you show gratitude, that lifts me up and it makes me feel, you know, a bit better about whatever situation we're about to talk about or go into.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah, no, it's been very interesting. And then another thing too is meditating. Sometimes before I get on calls, I just 5 minute meditation, or, you know, before the day starts, after the day ends, sometimes reading before and after, just to get the mind off of things. But those two skills have helped out a lot in corporate space.
That's great. So one of my favorite questions I ask people, and I look forward to hearing your answer, is have you had, and if you have, what is it, a mama, we made it moment?
Yes, Super Bowl this past year, I'm sitting with Andrea Fairchild. And so she's SVP at Visa, a sponsorship marketing, top dog. And so I worked with Andrea at Players Tribune when I interned while I was playing, before I started my media company. So I crossed paths with her there. And then the biggest thing is she worked for Kobe. You got Kobe in your background. Mm-hmm. I grew up with Kobe. She worked for Kobe Inc. And so Super Bowl, we're doing a panel about this NFL program. It's the first year that Visa's doing it, partnering with the NFL, the company that I work for, playing in corporately. And she had her Kobe's on while we're interviewing, and that's who I want to work for. And so I told Andrew, it's like, I dream about stuff like this. This is stuff that is full circle moment stuff, and the stuff that it's a part of my mission and my goal is to create a pipeline for athletes in this corporate space and build a support, because we, of course, as you know, athletes get a bad rap. And so sitting on the stage with a future boss, well, that's where I'm actually working. I'm working under her now, but a future boss talking about sport athlete transition. And I crossed paths with her a while back. She worked for Kobe. I mean, it was like a dream come true. So, you know, I told my mom about it way before. I was like, hey, like, I want to do this. And it happened. So that was like my mama, I made it moment, where, Yeah, it's like, hey, gold star, and like now keep going. Mama yeah. mentality. You're back on defense. Like you got a big dunk, spin, boom, dunk, boom, back on D. Let's go. Yeah. So that's my mentality right now.
That's great. That's great. So I'm going to close this out and hopefully have a little bit of fun along the way. When they turned your life story into a movie, who would you want to play that 6-foot linebacker on the big screen?
Yeah, definitely. If I had to have someone play Cam Lynch in a movie, it would be me. It would be me because I saw The Rock do it. You know, he had his own show NBC. Like, it would be me, to be honest. You know, I was thinking through, like, when you asked the question, my mind started racing, like, okay, who's the little bro that could really portray me really well? And I thought Denzel, the first thing I thought, I'm like, oh, that's that brother. He's by the 60s, like, tackling people. But then his son,
yeah.
Now we cooking with grease, you know, yeah. Cooking with grease now. A Childish Gambino, you know, he might sing and dance through the tackles, but, you know, I like doing that stuff too. So if it had to be anybody, if I had to give you an answer, it'd be myself. It'd be Denzel Washington's son, and then it would be Childish Gambino.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great list. Maybe we could use them like in different parts of your story and narrative over the movie.
Exactly.
So what song would play in the trailer of that movie?
Yeah. So the song that will play in the trailer is No Diggity by Blackstreet.
Wow. Wow.
I threw it back to, because my dad told me recently, to my partner, my lady, he said, hey, Aronique, he said, you know, it was playing on the radio. He said, you know, this is Cameron's favorite song when he was growing up. He said he would be in the back seat like, No Diggity. You know, so that would be my song.
Okay.
It would cut on, and you would see your boy Cam.
That's dope. So I'm a huge fan of stories. It's why I do the podcast. I just like hearing firsthand how people got to where they are. But for you, if you could listen to three people tell their story and they could be with us, they could have passed, who would be your three people?
Yeah, my first would be my Grandpa Ellis. That's my middle name, my dad's dad. Second one would be Kobe. Shout out, rest in peace. You know, he's behind you. And then third and the best, I do it every day, the Lord. You feel me? I pray on it. And that's, you know, as I tell this story and do different things, those are the people that I would want.
That's great. All right. Before I let you go, is there anything I didn't ask that you want to share or anything you want to ask me?
Yeah. I would say for me, like people say, like, hey, what's one thing that, one thing about you that people don't know, like I'm a big anime guy. Like I like anime. I like playing video games. Like I'm a nerd. Like I play engineer major, mechanical engineer major, AP physics, calc. So what is that for you? Something that people don't really know, that superpower, that thing that just makes you different than everybody.
I think the thing that people probably wouldn't pick up on or wouldn't guess is that I'm actually an introvert. So, you know, if you really get into the science of like extrovert, introvert, it's not about like who are those people that are up in forums talking and who are those people that are a bit more quiet, but it's more so about where you get your energy from. And so I actually, while I enjoy engaging with people and hearing stories, I like to do it on my time and in my capacity, in my like little bubbles. And so I would say that I'm actually more of an introvert than an extrovert. And my recharge time is when I have time for myself and the ability to listen to a podcast or read a book or, you know, the thing I've been doing lately that my wife makes fun of is I've been doing puzzles because it's my hands, it's tactile. It allows me to not be on a screen and it's not something that's quick. Like, you know, right now I'm doing a 1500 piece puzzle that's literally taken me the last 2 weeks, but I can go do it for, you know, 30 minutes here, pop over, check it out, and then go do something else. So I'd say that that's probably the thing for me is that I don't know if many people would have categorized me as an introvert.
Got it. Yeah. I think I would have probably said like something in between, you know, that's good stuff. And you mentioned recharging on your own. Like I like that as well. The puzzle piece. That's excellent. That'll be my takeaway from today is get a puzzle because that's really cool. And I want to ask you what my final question is. What book or suggested books?
Yeah. So I'm reading one right now and I'm going to forget the author, but I'll include the link in the notes. But it's all about the business of belonging, and it's it's called The Business of Belonging, and it's about community building. And the reason that I started that book is ultimately we as marketers, you know, or even not even marketers, as salespeople, if you're building a product, engineer, whatever, is you're trying to facilitate communities. You're trying to get a group of people to come together to do a thing. Most of us are in some capacity, even if you're in public office, you're trying to get these communities of people. But what is interesting to me is that I don't know that many of us take a step back and really understand why communities exist. What are the ways to get them to come together? What are the tools you have to actually spark that catalyst that gets communities? And so it's been an interesting read so far. I'm 3/4 of the way through because they have a focus on digital communities, but I think there are things that actually translate into our everyday life around the communities that you belong to. Because for instance, I'm a huge Peloton fan. So like that's a community of folks that I engage with. I'm also a huge fan of the NBA. So that's a community that I engage with. You know, obviously your local community, whether it be on Nextdoor, or even in your local neighborhood. So we all are in all these communities, and it's just interesting how those things allow us to connect with people, to learn things, to help people and whatnot. And so I'm just really fascinated about community building right now.
Yeah. I really like that, especially with this crypto NFT space that's opening up. They got the Discord communities and stuff. So it's the time to really read into that. And one book that I want to pass along is Fierce Conversations by Susan Scott. That book really changed things around for me. It taught me how to be hot, humble, open, and transparent. And it's something I've been doing my whole life. Just really figuring out the art of it. That book there, double thumbs up.
All right, I'm going to add it to my list. My list grows faster than I actually read them, though. So it's like I have this huge list and my huge Amazon wish list of books that are heading this way. But I appreciate you taking the time. Before I let you go, if anybody wanted to connect with you, they want to follow your story, where should I send them?
Yeah, Cameron Lynch 50 on Twitter and Instagram. So, my business is Heartwork Media on Twitter and Instagram, website. So that's where you can find me. And I appreciate you, man. This has been great. And I'm looking forward for our future conversations too.
Awesome. Well, again, I appreciate you taking the time. It's always great to learn more and get a little bit of the double click behind what I already knew was a great person, very driven individual that has all the talent in the world. So I appreciate watching your journey continue to unfold into the next chapters.
Appreciate you. Yeah. Chat soon.
I really enjoyed that conversation with Cam because he's one of those people that not only does he have great stories and a lot of experiences to learn from, but he gives you energy as you're talking to him and engaging with him, which is just a joy to have people like that to connect with. But the three things that I took away from our conversation, one is really looking back at his time playing in the NFL, how he called out that it's not as much about the physical stature of the players that become the great players and the standouts, but really their mental approach to the game. And I think that translates to pretty much every industry that you can think of. It's not about having the skills. It's not about having, the education or the trainings. It's really about how do you approach the task at hand? How do you approach building teams, collaborating with individuals, and ensuring that just your mental strategies and how do you go about accomplishing goals and achievements is more important than kind of what's on the paper. The second thing he talked a lot about of just understanding the rules and more importantly, learning the playbook. And so as he made his transition from the field into the corporate world, it was really important for him to understand the rules of this new environment that he was entering and understanding how he could take his skill sets and the things that he had learned, but apply them in a new way and almost, learn from a new playbook that he would be going to be successful. And I think that's something that sometimes we jump in to problem solving or we jump into providing answers without actually taking a step back and thinking about what are the rules of engagement. And then lastly, where he ended the conversation just around the importance of recovery and the importance of re-energizing yourself and knowing what re-energizes you so that you can be an energy captain. I think that's just as important. We sometimes think about downtime or self-care, as being selfish, but that's the only way you're going to be able to show up as 110%, or in his case, 1,000% of an energy captain. And so I think we just all have to figure out what is it in our days and in our weeks and our months that allows us to recuperate and allows us to kind of show up and bring that energy that we know we're going to need. Until next time, I encourage you, as always, to continue to share your story. It's so important, not only for you, but for others to hear your story. And if you have any feedback or any comments about any of the podcasts, feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me at all of the social channels at Matt E. Story, or you can go to my website, www.mattestory.com.